Welcome into Bleed Tech Blue Radio, special podcast-only edition of the show this week. And your favorite co-host, Jason Jones, joining us finally after a couple of weeks off. Jason, welcome in.
Glad to finally be back and finally joining you and ready to get going.
Yeah, as I've told some people who have asked where you've been, I said he's had some stuff. If it wasn't good for society, I would get on to him. But what you've been doing some meetings in Monroe for foster care. And I would be mad at you if it wasn't something good for society.
Yeah, I mean, if you're listening, it's not just a huge need in Northeast Louisiana. It's a huge need all over the state and all over the country. But there's just so many kids right now with no place to call home, and so we've been going through the training to be foster parents. I would encourage anybody else that's listening to look into doing the same.
Well, Jason, of course, the Bulldogs coming off a big-time victory against Southern. They did exactly what they were supposed to do against a FCS SWAC opponent and taking care of business inside Joe Ie Stadium in front of a huge crowd. We'll talk about that crowd later. But probably the most impressive part of the game was how they started fast, and that's something offensively, and that's something that last season they struggled. Even against Northwestern State, they struggled at starting fast.
Yeah, just getting into a rhythm, it seemed like they needed the defense to create some turnovers, create a little havoc, and just kind of get the game in a frenzy before the offense could finally start scoring. And this time it was really the offense and the special teams that got the team going. Not saying the defense wasn't right there with them, because we saw – you know, two big sacks by Vontarius Dora and then Tyler Porter.
Meatball.
So the defense was meatball. The defense was definitely doing their part. But Paul Turner had that return for a touchdown, but the offense was right there with him. And Kenneth Dixon just looks like every time he touches the ball, it's like he's shot out of a can, and he's wanting to score every time he touches the ball. And a lot of times he does. He's just been a touchdown machine his whole career. But Trent Taylor looked great. And Jeff Driscoll was so efficient. You know, four touchdown passes, a touchdown run.
12 for 15 passing.
Yeah, only three incompletions. So, I mean, just looks really solid. And Southern got behind and started passing the ball to try to get back in the game. And that just made matters worse, because they were going three and out every 45 seconds, giving the ball right back to Louisiana Tech. Before you know it, it's 52-8 at halftime.
And that just shows you even more that Blake Baker is continuing right where Manny Diaz left off last season, making an offense as one-dimensional as possible. That is the goal of this system that Louisiana Tech's running with all the pressure. You want to take the running game totally away from the opposing offense so that they're forced to pass and you can really pin your ears back and blitz them.
Yeah, you can blitz them, and then when your best players on the defense are in the secondary, you can trust those guys to make plays. Kentrell Bryce, Xavier Woods, Darius Barnes, Bryson Abraham. I mean, every time Coach Holtz talks about his defense, those are the kind of guys he's mentioning. And Cedric Cooper got out there a lot, and they're just out there ball hawks. And so he really trusts them to make plays on the ball, and when they're blitzing like they are up front, they're getting plenty of opportunities. And we saw some interceptions yesterday on Saturday.
One big concern for me, honestly, still after Southern, is the linebacker depth. And also, I wanted to, while we're talking about linebackers, Nick Thomason had a phenomenal game. He whiffed on a tackle on a run that probably would have been a tackle for a loss, but ran for a first down early in the game. But he really got his legs about him, and later in the first quarter had that huge force the ball out and got the interception to Xavier Woods, and then he had the pick six that was called back. But Nick Thomason had a really good game. But the twos and the threes at linebacker are a concern. You asked it on the message board today whether Mims was playing middle linebacker or outside. I believe he was playing outside from watching the replay on my DVR. But Mims is just a little small when it comes to getting off a blocker. So, but I thought that really, and I thought that Frazier Hogan had a good game. He kind of showed up because he's so tough. He didn't care who's going to block him. He's going to throw him to the side, and he's that strong. So I wonder if Frazier Hogan doesn't try to push Michael Mims for playing time.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many guys that moved up from defensive back to play linebacker, and they're all good players. But which ones fit in at what spot? And the good thing is there's competition. You've got Hogan, you've got Mims. On the other side, you know, C.J. Cleveland, Lloyd Grogan, Russell Ferris, where does he fit in? He can play middle or he can play outside. And just really liking the way Coach Holtz is playing these true freshmen like he did last year to try to get some experience so that when they step on the field the next year as starters, they're not, you know, first time ever stepping on the field. They've got some game experience. And so we've already saw some true freshmen get out there this time against Southern. Courtney Wallace up front got some playing time. Ephraim Kitchen had like four tackles, I believe, from cornerback. And so I'm wondering, you mentioned Nick Thompson being a senior middle linebacker, you know, 235, 240 pounds, just all over the field. He played in the last two games of the year last year and played really well. Where is that big middle linebacker that's going to replace him in years to come? And all eyes point to Brandon Dermott. And he's a true freshman. You don't really want to throw a true freshman out there first of the season. But hopefully as the weeks progress and he gets more and more practice time, you know, I'm hoping we'll see him second half of the season really get to play some in the middle and take over for Thompson, you know, be that heir apparent.
Yeah, that you bring up a good point. Behind both feet at that that will linebacker position right now is Michael Mims. If you can move Ferris over to his more natural position of will linebacker, you don't have the concern of somebody too small. So that's a really good point. But you got to find somebody who is able to fill Thomas's shoes. Is it going to be Derm? Is it going to be Quante Moore? Or isn't that his name? Quante Moore from in the car down in New Orleans. I don't think it's probably him. It's probably Derman. But Derman is just a true freshman, so he's got a lot of maturing to do and a lot of learning of the offense to be ready to take on that role.
Yeah, they've been trying to get those, you know, linebacker recruits. They've had a couple of misses, and they've got the Moore and Derman in there. And then, you know, they've looked at a couple of junior college middle linebackers. So we'll see. You know, they've gone strictly high school recruits the last couple of years, but, you know, you could see maybe a middle linebacker or a cornerback or maybe even a defensive lineman brought in if there was a player that fit that need specifically that was good enough and they didn't worry about taking a risk as far as grades or anything. But if Dermott can get some experience towards the end of the year, maybe he'll be that heir apparent. And like you said, move Ferris back out to the outside. You've got players like Lloyd Grogan and Russell Ferris. You don't feel worried about the outside linebacker spots moving forward. They still do have that little bit of lack of depth inside. And man, talking about Thomason having a great game, both feet played well, and that guy has been waiting his turn for so many years, and just seeing him now so bulked up to, you know, 230 pounds, where, you know, he came in as a 185-pound safety. He just looks like a totally different player, but he's a veteran player, and he and Thomason have really taken on that quest of being the linebackers that this team needed this year, because without those two, I mean, you basically have just a whole bunch of safeties running around.
You know, we might be splitting hairs a little bit. We're talking about a defense who just gave up 15 points. That was it Saturday. And the offense scored 62. Yeah, and eight of them were on special teams. So the defense gave up seven, and it was just the twos and the threes. So, yes, we're splitting hairs, but it's a Southern Jaguar team that I don't think anybody left that game impressed with anything the Southern Jaguars had to offer except for the return man. Yeah, we're splitting hairs a little bit, but at the same time, we have to keep perspective of who the Bulldogs just played, especially with the matchup Thursday against Western Kentucky. Let's go to the offense for a little bit. I mean, a team that scored 52 points in the first half, there's still something to talk about, believe it or not, or 50 points, I think it was. It was 52. So
yeah, and Tech was had 21 first downs, but they were only 3 out of 10 on third down. So, and a lot of that was the second half when there were other quarterbacks in the game. But in the first half, they didn't really get to third down a whole lot. It was just, you know, first down after first down and then touchdown. And, man, Dixon looked great. I thought Blake Martin played really well. Boston Scott. Still looking for that explosiveness out of Jared Kraft.
We didn't see a ton out of Jared Kraft Saturday, and I don't know 100% why that is. Maybe it's because Kenneth scored so quickly that they didn't need a second string running back a whole lot, and that's why the three and the four running back and five with Jacquees Dancy played. But you know, the biggest part to me, Jason, Saturday that we learned was how good this offensive line could be. Rarely was their quarterback ever under duress. The only time their only sack happened from Derek Edinburgh, who totally whiffed on that wide rush from the defensive end, but I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of Derek Edinburgh the entire time he's in Ruston.
Yeah, I mean, he's still got so much potential. I talked to one of the starting offensive linemen this summer, and they said he's the most physically talented player they have. If he could get it to click, I mean, he could be a good player for them. But to have that talented of a player as a backup is not a bad thing. And, you know, I was trying to watch some of the replay of the game this morning, and I saw Danielson out there a lot, you know, and Brown out at tackle, and then they love Shane Carpenter, the young guy. So you've actually got three tackles that they feel really good about. So there's just not a lot of time to get Edinburgh on the field. And then they like the young guys. I saw McCready out there some in the first half. He and Dugas, they really like. But Josh Robinson, it's finally clicking for him. Fifth-year senior, played well in the bowl game and in the Conference USA Championship game, just like Nick Thomason. He finally got his chance. And when the lights come on, I mean, Josh Robinson's a player. Everybody knew he had the talent. And so he's starting at right guard and moving all over the place and just playing really well. You've got David Mahaffey at guard.
And you know, and at backup center, because Brunson was hurt this past week. I don't know if Brunson's going to be back this week. He's got a little ankle tweak, but the quarterback play. I mean, Ryan Higgins threw a couple of interceptions that were deep balls that were they're trying to challenge Marlon Watts to go up and get a ball in competition. So it doesn't hurt you, but for Ryan Higgins' psyche, I don't want him to see him throwing any more interceptions. He's throwing enough as a Bulldog that it just can't be good on his psyche.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like Jeff Driscoll in the spring game threw a couple of grabs like that, and so then the questions were, well, you know, he's still going to throw that interception, but Higgins, you know, you're up by 40 points. Higgins throws a couple in the end zone. Yeah, they weren't the greatest throws. He's in double coverage. Maybe he's locked on to Watts too much, needs to look around a little bit more, mix it up. But he's 8 out of 11, so you take those two bad interceptions away, and he's 8 out of 9 for 76 yards. So very, very efficient, and just the main thing was getting back out on that field and in a real football game. Just so if for some reason you did need him, if Driscoll ever got banged up and you needed Higgins to go in there and run the team a little bit, he's not
a deer in the headlights.
His experience as a freshman, he's actually got experience now on the field this year.
And, you know, you go to the number three quarterback and Price Wilson, who even saw some time. He was only 1 for 3, but the one completion he had, I think, really showed his ability and how good he can be. The pass to Jacquees Dancy was quite impressive. The next two passes, he it was like he was all amped after making that interception, or, I mean, making that completion. And
He overthrows the next two.
But then we go to Jacquees Dancy, who had an outstanding game as a returner, just showed what he's got the ability to do. Had a nice run, had a nice catch. Now we see why Skip Holtz could not redshirt him this year. That kid's got to be something else.
He's got the 30-yard reception, the 47-yard kick return. He's just so explosive and such a great athlete. And, man, I can't wait to see he and Henderson out there on the field together. Just the speed that Louisiana Tech's recruited in the recent years. And just in the return game, I mean, these guys are so explosive. And it looks like Dixon has gotten so much faster since he first got here. And you can tell, you know, they've done such a great job in the weight room with them. These guys are just totally just on another level. And it's crazy, too, because they've developed some of that receiving depth. Henderson didn't even play in this game. Marlon Watts led the team with 4 catches. And Marcus Gaines had 2 catches, 31 yards, and a touchdown. And Dwan Oliver had the 37-yard reception. So these guys are making
a case. They're loaded at receiver.
Yeah, they're making a case for playing time. And you're not even talking about how great Trent Taylor and Paul Turner were. They had, you know, 3 catches and a touchdown and really stretched the field. And, you know, Gaines and Watts are so good, and those are, you know, backup guys. So when Henderson comes back, you know, there's so many weapons, and then Cam McKnight is really, you know, just starting to scratch the surface of what he can do. And he had the 1 catch for 20 yards. Grant Childress had his first catch of his career for 9 yards. Stanford saved the same thing, first catch of his career for 6 yards. So,
and all of those guys made plays. I mean, they made a move after they clicked the ball. It didn't just go down as soon as they they had the ball in their hands. So there's something to glean from everyone's play. And moving along to this week's opponent, I don't want to talk too much about Southern because, like I said, it's hard to really know exactly what Tech has playing a FCS SWAC opponent because that's just not great competition. But it did allow Tech to knock the rust off and move forward because whenever you watched Western Kentucky play Vanderbilt last Thursday night, to say there was rust is probably the understatement of the century.
So there were 2 of 11 on third down. They only had 11 first downs. They only scored the 2 touchdowns at the end of the game. And they beat Vanderbilt 14-12. I mean, just not. And the main thing is the rushing yards, they were 22 for 38. So, you know, the same thing that Tech's going to do to them is try to take the running game out of it. That's what Vanderbilt did to Western Kentucky. And you can tell, you take that running game away, you put pressure on the quarterback, and Western Kentucky has a hard time functioning.
And there's no doubt about it. I asked Blake Baker today if it's going to be a carbon copy of last year's game plan against the Hilltoppers from Ruston, and he's of course he said no, that they're going to add some things to it, but the basis will be, you know, exactly the same. That's what they did last year, is got after the quarterback early, got him rattled, and the rest was downhill. And I'm not saying that Western Kentucky didn't have a terrible game in Ruston a year ago. They did. But they had a really bad game, and Louisiana Tech had a really good game, and the result was they got shellacked in Joe Ice Stadium a year ago, and you know they're looking for revenge.
Yeah, and the biggest thing is their defense. You know, they gave up 12 points to Vanderbilt, but they had a couple of interceptions in the end zone. You know, Vanderbilt kind of shot themselves in the foot a couple of times. So the question is, you know, is the Western Kentucky defense improved at all? Because you're looking at some of the scores from last year, you know, they lost to Illinois, gave up 42 points. It lost to Middle Tennessee, gave up 50. Even in some of their wins, you know, against Old Dominion, they gave up 51, gave up 27 to UTEP, 24 to Army, 66 to Marshall, 48 to Central Michigan in the bowl game, 27 to Navy. So they're giving up points like crazy. I don't think they scored less than 30 points all year on offense, except when Louisiana Tech beat them 59-10. So their offense usually is going to score points, but it's the defense that was giving up so many points last year. So it's only give up 12. Is it because Vanderbilt's just bad on offense? Vanderbilt, you know, turned the ball over a few times, shot themselves in the foot. I feel like Tech can score the ball in Western Kentucky at least in the 20s.
There's no doubt about it.
I think in the 30s.
That's exactly what I think. Tech should score in the 30s, and there's no reason to think that Tech can't hold Western Kentucky to 21. I think that in the 20s is probably where they will score. They're not going to play as badly as they did a year ago, even without Jared Dangerfield has missed a lot of time this past against Vanderbilt, and I don't know if he's going to be good to go Saturday or Thursday for Tech. And then they've got a corner that was nicked up during the Vanderbilt game, and he hobbled the rest of the game. He came back in, but he wasn't 100%. So
yeah, that's one of their best defenders. So Wonderful Terry, I think is his name. And so, yeah, I mean, they're banged up pretty bad. And, yeah, they've got a whole week to get ready while Louisiana Tech's got turned around. We're
5 days.
We're talking on a Monday afternoon. We're 3 days away from the game. Tech's got to turn around real quick. But I feel like Tech was – and that was so huge for Tech to be able to get all those young players reps on offense and defense on Saturday against Southern. But also, you know, a lot of the stars are coming out in the middle of the second quarter. They didn't have to really wear down at all. They got a ton of rest, so they should be ready to turn around. Despite having to travel, they should be able to turn around and play and be healthy.
Yeah, I don't know that Tech even – their starters even felt tired, maybe even on Sunday, as little as they played. So I don't worry about Tech being fatigued in the least. You know, you talk about the young players, and then we can go right into recruiting and go back to Western Kentucky. Tech added another commitment last night, and Taylor Fondel, a offensive guard out of Westgate High School in New Iberia, a three-star – with offers from Ole Miss and Mississippi State, a big get for the Bulldogs. There's a little bit of, I don't know if it's controversy, but really kind of some weird stuff surrounding the commitment, since we still haven't seen the classic hashtag a roof tweet from Louisiana Tech on it, which tells me that he hasn't told them. I'm not saying they're keeping it secret, because Lord knows he hasn't made it secret on Twitter. The New Orleans Times-Picayune is talking about it. The Advocate's talking about it. So everybody knows the guy's committed, except for the Tech coaches, it would appear.
Yeah, and we reached out to him, and he said that he had mentioned to Coach Scott, Carl Scott, the defensive backs coach at Louisiana Tech. He's the coach that's recruiting him. He mentioned to Coach Scott that he was going to commit, and then that he was going to try to talk to him last night. So we don't know if they talked or not, but, you know, it's still a huge deal if you've got one of the top players in the state saying that he wants to play for you. So I'm sure they'll talk eventually, and that'll get straightened out. And that's just another offensive lineman that Tech asked class that looks really good and has some really, you know, good schools recruiting.
And then you look at him on the track. I think he was a field athlete, correct? And
yeah,
he,
shot put
guy with LSU offering in track and field. And then some other offers in track and field. So that he's such a good athlete. And somebody even said that maybe his dad played at Grambling. I know his dad's a high school coach down in New Iberia, or not a high school coach, but a middle school coach in the New Iberia area. So he's got a good football mind. Obviously, he's a coach's son. There's nothing not to like about Taylor Fondle's commitment. I just want it to become official with that Aroof tweet. I'm a sucker for that Aroof tweet.
Yeah, I guess so. And that commitment's coming right off the heels of the commitment of Willie Baker a couple of weeks ago from Livonia. And so got some really high-profile kids committing. You know, Baker had the offers from all over the country, NC State, Michigan, Tennessee, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, so many other schools. And so the momentum's really building. That end zone facility of the Davidson Athletic Complex looks so great in the end zone against Southern. Packed house. Within maybe 100 people of being a sellout, you know, 99% full, second largest crowd in Tech history. So it was just a really good night. A lot of big time recruits that were there at the game. Fondle didn't even make it, but there were some really high profile kids that came, you know, led by John Tate from Pine Bluff, the 255-pound, 6'5" defensive lineman.
Yeah, I mean, you have made a great segue here into the crowd Saturday night inside the OIA Stadium. Jason, since 2003, since I've been in Ruston, there's no doubt that was the best atmosphere. Now, it was a great atmosphere just for a quarter and a half, because the game was over by the time the first quarter was over. But what that does, whenever you can perform like that in front of a near sellout crowd, it gets people back to sit back down in those seats and watch the Bulldogs play football. And that's something that Coach Holt said today in the press conference. He wants to build on it. He doesn't want this to be a flash in the pan. He wants to see it again. And whenever you and he knows this, whenever you perform like they did Saturday in front of that kind of a crowd, they're going to come back. We'd be remiss not to say that, I mean, there was probably 5,000 to 6,000 Southern fans in the stands, so that always helps. But Tech needs to get away from needing the away team to travel 5,000 or 6,000 people to get that close to a sellout.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing how far Tech's come. I mean, 10, 15 years ago when the FCS team came to town, you're going to have about 15,000 fans in the stadium, and it was half full. More recently, 2021 has kind of been that range for the FCS game. So you're right, Southern did bring a lot of fans. There were 24,000, 25,000 Tech fans there. And the atmosphere just keeps getting better at the stadium, the support, the tailgating. You know, I'm driving in 3 hours before kickoff. You could just drive wherever you wanted. And I'm having to wait in lines and wait for the police to navigate people through. And it's just crowded already. It's great. And, you know, the tailgating, the atmosphere, everything's just so good. And so the crowds are becoming bigger, and Tech's having to figure out, hey, how do we get these people in the stadium? How do we get the concessions figured out? Because it's a good problem to have. There's so many people. And Tech's done a pretty good job of handling it. The concessions are a lot better. You got all these new offerings like they had last year, like Chick-fil-A and McAllister's and doing a really good job with it. I think that helps bring people back because they're enjoying themselves, and there's a great product on the field. I mean, winning cures everything, and takes winning now.
Now, Jason, you can attest to this because I was actually in the end zone standing below the Davison Athletics Complex whenever at kickoff. What was the crowd like up there of those 300 seats? What percentage were full? Was it 95% full, 100% full? What would you guess?
Well, I mean, at kickoff, it looked to me it was only like 65-70% full, but eventually they did fill up, I would say, around 90-95%. And
In the second quarter when I had flipped and gone to the north end zone and was looking back, I was like, well, where were these people? That tells you that they don't even feel like they've got to be there. But like I said, at that point, the game was out of hand, and you might as well have headed to the house because there was nothing new was going to happen.
They've got that nice room right behind them, you know, with the air.
And you can't see those people.
So they're probably leaving their seats and going back inside where there's an air conditioner. It takes up about 30, 40 points. You know, they're probably just enjoying themselves. So at that point, you know, the game was kind of nine, you know, after they scored 40 something points, the game wasn't that exciting anymore. So they were probably going back in and
sipping on some adult beverages.
Yeah, socializing a little bit. So, you know, I don't blame them. The main thing was those recruits were there to see it. There were some just really, really good kids that were there. And so having that kind of atmosphere, game in and game out, and winning in front of those type of players, you're going to see more three-star kids committing.
Early, like this is. This is still early.
Yeah, I mean, hey, it wasn't 2006, 2007. I'll never forget, Dusty Rust was the first commitment of the year, and he was like November. And we're talking about having a 16th commitment at the beginning of September. So it gets early and earlier every year. But Skip Holtz and staff, they've got this down to the science. They're doing really good with recruiting. And it's just getting easier now with this facility. And they've got their players in. And so they're, you know, winning brings better players, which brings more winning. And so they're definitely doing this thing right. But some of the kids that were there, and I mentioned John Tate from Pine Bluff, there's a couple of 2017 kids there, really big, high-profile kids, Joshua Johnson, three-star wide receiver from, I get them all confused, I think it's Central Arkansas Christian, CAC, in North Little Rock. And then Keldrick Carper from Plain Dealing, Louisiana, is a four-star kid, 6'3" athlete.
So those kind of atmospheres and that kind of an experience for kids is big time in the recruiting process. Now, these guys have a year and a half before signing day for their respective signing classes or signing days. So there's a long time before, but you've got to make these kind of impacts on them early so that you have a shot at them come February of 2017.
Yeah, I mean, the Johnson kid out of Little Rock, he's got offers right now from Kansas, Memphis, and Louisiana Tech. And you know Rob Likens, former Louisiana Tech receivers coach, is going to be all over him from Kansas. And, you know, he's a good receivers coach. He coached Quentin Patton and Miles White. And he's the one that recruited Ken Dixon out of Arkansas. So he's going to go into Arkansas and be all over Josh Johnson. And so for Tech to get on him early, Tech's having a lot of success in Arkansas. I mentioned John Tate was there. He's got a teammate that's committed. There's a commitment from Fort Smith. There's an offer.
Cam Murray, the D-tackle out of Anna Bryant, was there Saturday. So there's another one, another high-profile.
Yeah, he's right there in the Little Rock area. So, I mean, Tech's making huge inroads in the state of Arkansas. And so, you know, if they can get some of these players this year, you know, Josh Johnson's going to see that, and he's going to – definitely make Tech a priority in his recruitment next season. But there's so many high-profile 2016 kids still out there that Tech's got so many. If you got 16 commitments, they're only going to take 23, 24 tops in their signing class. There's only, you know, 6, 7, 8 spots left.
A handful of spots left.
Yeah, very. You know, John Tate's a three-star, 2016 defensive lineman. But some of the kids that they're in on, Zaire Jones out of Meridian, Tech's got a teammate of his committed. He's a three-star kid. He's still out there. And then you've got Nathaniel Evans, the linebacker of John Curtis, Nehemiah Augustus, linebacker out of Patterson, DeAndre Hardwick out of Fort Smith Northside, 240-pound middle linebacker. Maybe he's that next middle linebacker that they can pull in. Coney Durr, the Dutchtown defensive back, three-star kid. Gerard Sanders, three-star receiver. Out of Bishop Dunn in Dallas, whose dad, Glenel Sanders, was one of the greatest defenders in Louisiana Tech history and their all-time leading tackler. You mentioned Cam Murray out of Bryan, Arkansas. Dylan Fonier out of
Sanders is down to Northwestern and Chicago and Louisiana Tech. Those are his final two. So hopefully he takes that official visit for Louisiana Tech fans. You should hope that he takes that visit in the dead of winter in Chicago, because that will not help the Northwestern Wildcats' chances when it comes to Sanders.
Oh, yeah. And so, I mean, there's just so many high-profile players still out there that Tech's in decent shape with, or even good shape with. And so just landing a handful of those guys would transform this class and really go a long way into making it one of the best that they've ever had. And there's so many three-star kids they've already got committed. The most recent two were really big-time gets. And they're the big guys up front. I get excited every time they get commitments up front. So to get an offensive guard and a defensive end like Willie Baker, you know, makes me feel I'm really good about the future at Louisiana Tech, because when you've got the big boys up front, you know, it makes it easier on all the other guys.
Well, Jason, it's time for our weekly segment where you talk about Massey Ratings and your love affair with MasseyRatings.com. Probably the easiest place to go on the internet to see a computer predict outcomes of football games. They put all the stats in from week one, have Louisiana Tech ranked number 55 in the country with an offense of number 57 and a defense of number 54, and play the number 70 team in the country on the road Thursday night, Western Kentucky, on national television, Fox Sports 1. They give Tech a 55% chance of victory, 38-35.
That's not bad. And you know,
the line from Vegas, of course, opened at a 3-point Tech underdog, went up to a pick'em, meaning Vegas didn't know who was going to win. You could pick either team, and now it's to a Western Kentucky 2-point favorite. So 2.5-point favorite on win in Las Vegas, but it's pretty much 2 or 2.5 all over Vegas right now, and that's interesting to me. The home field advantage is the only reason they're favoring Western Kentucky right now, and they normally give 3 points for home field advantage.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of optimism in Conference USA right now, just in the area. You know, we saw Louisiana Lafayette, Texas San Antonio, Southern Miss. They all played really well against the big boys, you know, Mississippi State, Arizona, and you know, they had games where they felt like they took something from it and they maybe had a chance. You know, ULL was beating Kentucky.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they're playing well. And so there's a lot of optimism, but, you know, Tech handled those teams last year. And I feel like, and a lot of those teams are having to come to Ruston now, Southern Miss and ULL. And you talk about Massey Ratings. He's got Tech favored, you know, by 70% plus against those schools. But Western Kentucky actually won their game against a big school, against Vanderbilt. Now, it was only 14-12. They did not look impressive at all doing it, but the win is all that matters. So,
and Massey has Vanderbilt as the 86th best team in the country.
Yeah, so, and we know Vanderbilt really struggles on offense. So, you know, I feel like Tech's got a better offense than Vanderbilt and a similar defense. They'll be able to really pin their ears back and get after Western Kentucky, but I think Tech's going to have a better time scoring. I'm not getting the whole love from Vegas, the 2-point underdog. I'm just not seeing it. Tech handled this team last year. The Tech's got better athletes. They're bigger up front. And I just feel like Tech's going to handle Western Kentucky again. You know, I talked about earlier in the podcast, you know, Tech's going to score at least, you know, in the 20s, but probably in the 30s. I feel like they're going to hold Western Kentucky down into the 20s. I'm going to guess like 34-24. I really
think you're already
Tech's
jumping into
win.
The predictions. So, but
yeah, I feel like Tech's going to win by like 10 points. I really do.
And then you look at on Western Kentucky side, they've got a player. Their starting safety is suspended for the first half of the game for a targeting penalty drew against Vanderbilt last week. So he's out for the first half. So that limits their depth at safety. You know they're going to go after that backup safety from the get-go. The corner could be out. Jared Dangerfield could be out. The backup running back is not listed on the two deep this week. They're scat back. So I'm with you. I like this matchup if you're Louisiana Tech. They just got to, like they say every week in the press conference, it's about them. If they do their job, they'll be okay. What did you say, 35-24?
34-24. Give the field goal kicker a little love. Let him get a couple three-point shots in there.
34-24. You know, you're probably pretty close. I'll go 34-21. Maybe even – I could even see 35-21. Something around there being the outcome. I'm with you. I don't understand the Vegas love. It's all home field advantage and the fact that Tech played – a cupcake Saturday. Let's not make any ifs, ands, or buts about that. They were a cupcake. The Southern Jaguars missed spring practice, and I think that really, really hurt them.
Yeah, I think Southern, I mean, they had a talented quarterback and running back, but they're just overwhelmed by the pressure. You know, the offensive line was overwhelmed, and so it didn't allow the quarterback and the running back to get much done. And, you know, but it was good for Tate to get out there and just take care of business, because there was games last year against Old Dominion and Northwestern State where they started off hot, and then they let those two teams get back in the game, and they lost the game. And so to just put it away by the halftime, 52-8, and make it a no-doubter, that was good. Just don't even let them get back in the game. And so against Western Kentucky, I feel like Tech's going to control it. Conference USA is off to a hot start. Western Kentucky, you know, beat an SEC team. Next week, after they play Tech, they play Indiana. Let them get healthy. They'll have a couple of days extra rest. Let them go beat Indiana. But I don't think they can beat Louisiana Tech. Tech's the best team they play all year, and that's including a team from the Big Ten and the SEC. And I think Tech's the team to beat this year in the conference. Everybody's talking about Marshall for Western Kentucky, but I feel like Tech's got the best players. I really do.
You know, that's a nice segue into last week around Conference USA. Florida International went into Orlando and beat Central Florida 15-14. That's kind of a surprise to Florida International. The Panthers have to come to Ruston in a couple of weeks to play the Bulldogs. Western Kentucky, of course, took care of Vanderbilt in Nashville. UTSA gave number 22 Arizona all they wanted. I think it's a matchup deal with UTSA. They match up really well against certain teams, and I think Arizona was probably one of those teams. Charlotte, in their FBS debut, took care of Georgia State in Atlanta 23-20. For probably the pillow fight of the week, let's just call a spade a spade. Those two teams are really bad.
Two brand new programs in big markets, and they're right down the road from each other. And Charlotte's a little bit newer team than Georgia State, but Charlotte won. Old Dominion came back and beat Eastern Michigan, so Conference USA got a win over the MAC. Florida Atlantic couldn't get it done against Tulsa, but they were in it until the last part.
47-44, lots of defense played in that game.
Yeah, and then you mentioned FIU beating Central Florida. That's a huge win. Not only will Western Kentucky get a shot at Indiana in a couple of weeks, but later in the year, Florida International gets a shot at Indiana. And I think Florida International might have the second-best defense in Conference USA behind Louisiana Tech. They just, you know, luckily for Tech, Florida International has to come to Ruston, and they just don't quite have the offensive players that Tech does. But their defense is really something, and, you know, they were able to get that win against Central Florida and really open some eyes around the country.
And UTEP traveled to Fayetteville, Arkansas, took on the number 18 Arkansas Razorbacks in a bloodbath. 48-13, the Razorbacks prevailed. Rice hosted Wagner. Not even sure what their mascot is. Looking here on ESPN.com, looks like some kind of an eagle. 56-16, the Rice Owls were victors. Tech, of course, 60 all over Southern, 62-15. Middle Tennessee hosted someone else from the SWAC, Jackson State, 70-14. The Raiders, Blue Raiders, are victorious. Jackson State, also probably one of the worst teams in the SWAC. Southern being one of the better teams in the SWAC. Southern Miss actually gave Mississippi State a game, which was surprising to me. Mississippi State wins 34-16, and then yesterday, I should say, with this being Monday, on Sunday, Marshall took care of Purdue at home, 41-31.
I thought Southern Miss played well for a half and hung around with Mississippi State. I don't know if that speaks well of Southern Miss or bad of Mississippi State or both, but Louisiana Tech plays both of those teams, and I feel like Tech's still got the advantage over Southern Miss, and they'll be able to handle them at the last game of the year, so we got a long way to go. But Tech's got to go to Mississippi State in a few weeks, about halfway through the season, And they certainly did not look like the same team that they had a year ago. They lost a ton of starters, and even though they still have a lot of juniors and seniors on the field, they don't have quite the experience. And Dak Prescott doesn't have all the weapons that he had last year. So I feel like Mississippi State is vulnerable. But talking about Conference USA, they certainly had a great week. Last year, the conference did not get a win against one of the P5, one of the big boys last year, until Tech beat Illinois in the Heart of Dallas Bowl. This year, week one, banger off the bat. Marshall beats Purdue. Western Kentucky beats Vanderbilt. 2-0, or not 2-0, but two wins against the FBS. And they've got some more chances to do it this coming weekend. The Tech plays Kansas State later in the year, well, in a week and a half. Well, Texas San Antonio gets a crack at on this Saturday in San Antonio. They've got at least a chance. UTEP got hammered by Arkansas, but they go to Texas Tech. They'll get a lot easier chance to beat the Red Raiders. I think they can do it. It's not a given, but it's certainly a chance. FIU goes to Indiana. That's the one I think they could shock the world. I mean, anytime you beat Indiana, it's not shocking the world, but if you're FIU, it's still an upset. That would be a big win. Rice goes to Texas. Texas didn't look so hot against Notre Dame.
And Rice, you know, Rice is pretty good.
Rice is pretty good. I mean, so there's some chances there. And then a couple of rivalry games, Marshall to Ohio and North Texas to SMU. Those are not P5 teams, but just a chance for those two Conference USA schools to get wins over rivals and make statements against other conferences that Conference USA is certainly competing with. So some really good opportunities this coming week for Conference USA to keep going after that great start they had in week one.
One thing's for sure, Jason, going into week three, Louisiana Tech fans will know a whole lot more about their football team after this week playing Western Kentucky. I like their chances right now in the little apple of Manhattan, Kansas. We'll talk Tuesday night next week on regularly scheduled Bleed Tech Blue Radio and ESPN Radio 97.7 from 6 to 7:30. Unless something changes drastically, I like their chances in Manhattan. And then, of course, 2 weeks after that, they head to Stark Vegas, Starkville, Mississippi, to take on the Bulldogs of Mississippi State, a game that I also still feel pretty decent about. They had a chance to beat them a couple of years ago in Starkville. If they do it this time, I would imagine a buyout of that game that's supposed to happen in Ruston. I think it's next year.
Well, they moved it back to 2017, so next year.
You're the schedule guy. You know that about me. I'm not a schedule chaser.
Next year, the Tech's two games against P5 teams are at Arkansas and at Texas Tech. They also go to UMass. And then in 2017, they play Mississippi State in Ruston. And I believe they open up the season now at Texas in 2017. So some interesting games for sure. But, yeah, this year, I mean, we'll see. Like you said, we'll watch Tech play against Western Kentucky. We'll watch Texas San Antonio against Kansas State, and we'll have a lot better feel for what Tech against Kansas State will be like, and we'll have a great time talking about that next week on the show. And, you know, we'll have an idea of what we're talking about, because like you said, I mean, Tech played Southern. It's kind of hard to tell what we were looking at. Driscoll looked like a world beater. Hopefully he'll play that well against West Kentucky, and we can get a better idea of what this offense is going to look like.
Well, Jason, really appreciate you joining me here. I told you 45 minutes. We're sitting at 40-40 right now. We were hitting it right on the nose. Folks, we'll be, like I said, back same time as normal, Tuesday night, 6 to 7:30 on ESPN Radio 97.7. Skip Holtz had the gall to bump us from our time slot tomorrow night on ESPN Radio for his Inside Bulldog football at the Doghouse in Ruston. So, luckily, he's a nice guy, and we allowed him to have that time slot. But like I said, we'll be back the same normal time, 6 to 7:30 on ESPN Radio. I am Jay Ford, publisher at BleedTechBlue.com and host of Bleed Tech Blue Radio. Jason Jones joining me on this special podcast edition. We'll see you next Tuesday night on ESPN Radio 97.7 from 6 to 7:30. See you guys then.
Here comes the rain again, falling from the stars. Drenched in my pain again, becoming who we are. As my memory rests, but never forgets what I lost. Wake me up when September ends.